This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm your host, Joe Rimmer, and today I'm joined by Theo Squires. How are you, Theo?
Not too bad. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Beth Linda, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
I'm bright and breezy, and I'll follow you.
You've ruined it. I wanted to say that, but thanks. Yeah, I know, exactly. Bright and breezy. So, I'm very much the opposite of bright and breezy. I haven't been to Brighton, which is a long way from my house.
Let's start with the obvious question. Are Tottenham going to win the league?
I think if they don't, then they should be embarrassed. With the position they're in now, there's only 30 games to go. So they've more or less got it in the bag. It's between them and Arsenal, isn't it?
So Spurs fans, send some feedback to Ian Doyle. Yeah. Ian.Doyle@richardbelsing.com.
Yeah.
If you'd like to get directly in touch.
Or at Ian Doyle Sports on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
Or just cover all the bases. They already follow you all anyway, don't they?
And you're going to have to go on a Spurs podcast to apologise later this season. Like you did.
Well, I didn't really apologise. Yeah. I ended up being proven correct on Arsenal, so hopefully I'll be proven right on Tottenham as well.
That they will win the league.
Anyway.
I think you've just rewritten history. Anyway, right, Brighton, you were at Brighton.
Yes, I was, yeah. Me and Paul.
And 2 points dropped or 1 point gained?
Depends. Before the game, I mean, I'm pretty sure in the podcast I said it had finished 2-2. I think Ghosty said 1-0 when we did it on Friday, and I almost burst out laughing, going, there's no way one of these teams is going to score 0 goals in that game. And so it proved. I think before the game, you'd have taken a point. After half an hour, you'd have definitely taken a point. At half time, 70 minutes gone, you'd have not taken a point. So I think overall, I think Klopp said it best, didn't he? He said he thought it was a fair result. I think given what happened with Liverpool last season at Brighton, with that 3-0 defeat, the FA Cup game as well, where they got beat 2-1, I think, especially with the players missing as well. I know it doesn't seem a lot, but no Curtis Jones, I thought it was a big miss. No Diogo Jota to come on at some point and kind of like, you know, wobble his way through and just snaffle a goal. Like I think he scored one there in COVID time, I seem to remember, in a 1-1 draw. And then you look at the midfielders that were missing. I know Thiago and Stefan Vasetic haven't played this season, but when you've got, you know, Vitaro Endo, who I was surprised he didn't play, but obviously Klopp seeing stuff on the training ground, or perhaps doesn't feel as though he can trust him quite just yet to play in that defensive midfield role. You've got McAllister playing there, and then they got a decision who to play in midfield with them, because there's not many other options at the moment. So Harvey Elliott played, didn't work out, but Ryan Granvich on at the second half, and I know he played better, but you could argue that didn't work out either, given the fact that he missed an absolute sitter to make it 3-1. So overall, I don't necessarily think it's 2 points dropped. I think it's just a point. It's just a point gained, you'd have to argue.
There seemed to be, Beth, I mean, it's not like social media to react in strange ways, but a lot of people were very upset yesterday. And I thought, you know, okay, in circumstances, you don't want to drop points from a winning position. But as Ian has just said, you know, it's a difficult place to go, Brighton. They've turned good teams over this season. It feels like maybe last week is still sort of impacting on people's thoughts of this game.
Yeah, I think it's because Liverpool made such a strong start to the season, and I think there was sort of whisperings of, you know, could this be a title challenging team? And I think sort of yesterday proved that there's still cracks in this team, and I think that's what most of us would probably have said coming into the season. You know, the lack of having a real world-class defensive midfielder, you know, perhaps the lack of not bringing in another defender, as much as Jarrell Quantz has done very, very well. You know, I think Liverpool maybe paid the price a little bit, certainly for the midfield one yesterday. But yeah, I was quite surprised actually when I looked at the table last night and saw Liverpool were only 3 points off the summit. And you've got to say, after, you know, the run of games they've had, I mean, is it 5 away games they've had out of 8? Mm-hmm. You know, going to Newcastle, Chelsea, Tottenham, to have gotten all of those out of the way and to still only be 3 points off. And you look at the run of fixtures now, and it's quite a favourable run, and you think, if Liverpool can win all of those games, as you would predict that they would, of course, it might not prove the case, but they'd be going to Manchester City in a really good place then in November. So, yeah, I think, you know, social media is always for a reactionary, isn't it? And I think perhaps in the context of how Brighton have fared the last couple of weeks. Obviously, they had a bit of a mauling, didn't they, at Aston Villa, and they've had a couple of tricky games in the Europa League as well. So I think, you know, it's maybe a little bit of overspill from that. You know, I felt going into the Tottenham and Brighton game that we needed to win at least one to maybe sort of announce ourselves as title challengers. But yeah, I think it's probably a little bit of an overreaction, a point away at Brighton. It is certainly not the worst result. We saw City slip up at Wolves, didn't we, the other week, a game that Liverpool managed to win. So yeah, I think it was a fair result, and I don't think it was a bad result really in the context of the season.
I suppose my frustration, Theo, was that it came out of the Tottenham game. It felt like even though the result went against them, everything went against them that afternoon, I felt like there was a togetherness and a sense that Liverpool could take that and really launch themselves into the next games. It just didn't come out. And we've seen this a lot this season. It didn't come out and didn't start well against Brighton. They allowed Brighton to get a foothold, control the game and be the better side until Liverpool took the lead. Is that a concern for you that they're just not really going into games and playing as well as we know they can?
A little bit. Like, it has been an issue for Liverpool last season as well, but the difference this year is for the majority they have been picking up the results. They have been showing that resilience. And against Tottenham, we felt it was a step too far for them. The luck was going to run out. They were going to fall behind at one point and not be able to claw it back. But there's still a little bit of spirit there. Like, as Doyle's referenced, they are missing players through injury suspensions. And it's at best reference, really. You don't have that natural holding midfielder in McAllister. Like, he's doing a good job. I think he's spoken to the club and said he's still learning on the job, but he's enjoying it. But you still feel like you'd be stronger if you had an actual enforcer in there. If they'd gone and got Caicedo, who's not had the best start for Chelsea, but he's still someone who's a natural in that position, you'd feel a bit more comfortable there. But the fact that Liverpool are so close to the top of the table when they're not in their best position in terms of where they could be, they're still a step in the right direction. When we start the season, you're all saying, go for top four. That's your aim. And then they start well, they get the results when you're not necessarily expecting them to get the results, or maybe they're better than they are. It's just going to be so tight this season anyway. It's a point up on what they did last year at Brighton, and it seems that Brighton's been a tough place for them to go, a tough opponent for them in recent months and recent years. So it's still another step there for them that they can build on. You think after the international break, you're going to have Jota back from suspension. You'd like to think Thiago's close to return, Pesetic's close to return. Gakpo, I think Klopp said he's hopeful he's going to be back as well. There's still reason to be positive and think they can go on a good run at some point this season. It has been a tough start, but they've still got the points there. And the fact that City aren't miles away at the top of the table, it's going to be a lot tighter this year. You've still got faith that Spurs are going to Spurs it, Arsenal are going to Arsenal it. If you're just in the mix, you've got a chance.
I mean, they'd have to do a lot now, wouldn't they, to throw it away? I think they should share the title, probably.
Yeah, North London United.
Yeah. I can sing that song. They've been singing. Sorry, Theo. Carry on making.
That was it. That finished.
Sorry. The midfield balance. You touched on it before, Doyle. Midfield balance still not quite right, and hasn't been really throughout the season. Even though we've seen good things, you touched on before Endo not playing. It felt really strange that he didn't play a single minute of the game, considering he was brought up at half time, wasn't he, in the Europa League game. Do you think it's just a case of Fabinho type, we give him time, need some time to settle in, or do you think there's a slight concern over perhaps he's not, you know, quite up to the pace?
No, it's going to be a bit of both, isn't it? I think, don't think Klopp would have expected him to take this long to settle, but on the other side of that, we spoke to him actually after the game on Thursday when he got subbed at half time, when I thought he did it right in the first half, and he was basically saying, look, my life's getting back to normal now, my family's over, this, that and the other, we found somewhere to live, and yeah, he feels a bit more settled. And obviously, he's been at the club for 6 weeks now, is it? So we're approaching 2 months, which is quite a long time to be, you know, still waiting to settle. So I think he's part of the group and all that kind of stuff. So that's not an issue. I think the next 7 games, he's going to be seeing a lot of football because they've got the 2 Europa League games, the Bournemouth game and the League Cup. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned before, the League games. Was it Everton, Forest, Luton away and Brentford, isn't it? So you're looking at them, you're thinking, well, no matter when those games are getting played, a lot of them, you'd expect him to be starting anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think he's going to get a lot of minutes, and hopefully by then he might have Pesetic back, possibly. Not sure on Thiago. Not sure when exactly he's ever going to come back. And then they'll have Curtis Jones back for the last couple of games, and I feel a little bit sorry for McAllister on the way things have gone, because he's obviously moved to a new club, trying to settle in. He'd done really well during the summer playing on the left of that midfield three, and he played a lot better than Szoboszlai had done. And then when the season starts, he plays against Chelsea in that position, and then you think, oh, he's going to stay there for a little minute, and then he's still there. You know, like nearly 2 months later, he's still playing in it. It's like, well, hang on. And for Liverpool to still only be three... I mean, the reason Liverpool only 3 points off the top is compared to last season, Arsenal won all the games, so they would have been 7 points behind. No, let's not kid ourselves. Man City lost twice. You know, and it was only 2 weeks ago that they'd won every single game. You know, they looked as though they were going to be going on. So there isn't an outstanding team at the moment, which has been a little bit unlike possibly the last 3, 4, 5 years, when it's obvious there was one team, or certainly one or two teams. There isn't that at the moment, as much as I was saying about Tottenham and Arsenal. Because Arsenal played 5 at home of the 8. I don't know why the fixture list has done this year. City, Liverpool and Tottenham have played 5 away.
So we can enjoy Arsenal throwing it away even more.
Well, you know, they might have a bit of momentum. Also, I would say about Arsenal is that it was a bit jammy against City, weren't they? They got a bit of jam against United as well.
I mean, this isn't the blood Arsenal.
No, but the point I'm making, is that people might say Liverpool have had a bit of luck, which they have done, but Arsenal have had some. Tottenham had some against Liverpool. Mm. They've all had a bit. And I think that's kind of helping them all build a certain amount of momentum. Like, as you say, there's some, we know some Liverpool supporters who are going to jump off a bridge at the final whistle against in the Brighton game and say, well, hang on a minute. You know, they got, as we said before, they got beat 3-0 there last season back in January. And that was only, what, 10 months ago? Less than 10 months ago. And look how far the team's come since then. They've suddenly lost one game in 22 in all competitions. And everybody knows what all the issues are, so they can work through them. The only worry is that what happened, the one midfield injury away from it all going massively wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's always the thing at the moment with Liverpool, is because they haven't got the strength and depth of certainly City, even United, let's be honest. Yeah, they've got so many players.
Look at the change of the bench yesterday.
Well, that's the thing.
Looking brilliant at spares to, you know.
Well, that's, I think he likes that. But I think you've also got to bear in mind the bench. Is it 9 players on the bench? Yeah. So that's 20 players. Yeah. In the old days, it was like, when I was growing up, it was 1 player on the bench, then it was 2, then it was 5. Recently, it was 7. Now it's 9. Yeah. And they say, well, they can't all play. And so even if you've got a squad of 20, that's almost 2 players for every single position. So,
but teams have that.
Yeah, but I'm saying is that's what Liverpool have got. Mm-hmm. They'd have a squad of 24, 25 senior professionals or youngsters who made sufficient senior appearances. But yeah, you look for the bench, but then you went, hang on, but these 2 players are suspended. Yeah. These 3 or 4 players are injured. This one player, he doesn't quite trust him just yet. And suddenly, you then go, oh, is this an issue? And it's like, well, no, they're only 8 games into the season. It's a very long way to go. And as we said before, these next 4 games will be quite interesting because it leads into the City one. So they've given themselves the chance to build on it in the next 4 weeks. And what they've got next 4 games, what they've got to hope is that, we already know Curtis Jones is going to miss 2 of them. They have to hope is that they can keep most of the players together, which is why, oh, look, the international breaks here now when everybody gets injured and, you know, that kind of thing happens.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You take it back to the Champions year. When you look at these sorts of results, a side that is going to be Champions gets a late winner against Brighton, or they get the point against Spurs. But that's only a concern if other teams are doing it. Like, I know Arsenal got their late winner against Manchester United, but there is no one running away with it here. As Doyle said, there is no standout team. So for just avoiding the majority of defeats, as long as you're getting your wins in your home games against the big six like Arsenal did yesterday, then you're giving yourself a chance to still be in contention when it gets to the business end. And we all think Liverpool's a promising start, but they will be stronger in a few months' time when Gravenberch has settled more, when Szoboszlai has settled more and gets even better, McAllister hopefully in his best position. Like we've referenced it on the podcast a few times, if Conor Bradley doesn't get injured, do we see Trent as that holding midfielder? And I think even though he's not played that before, we feel more confident him being a number 6 there, and you think we can go in that right direction. Liverpool are still trying to find out what is their best team, where they want their players to play, and it is square pegs, round holes. But still be in the top four, having only lost a game because they were robbed by the officials. That isn't a reason to be negative, that they could be top if things had gone a bit better for them. They're just in the mix along with everyone else at the top of the table at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Beth, do you think it's an element for Liverpool fans, you know, that obviously Ran City so close to the title, missed out by a point in a couple of years. Do you think it's a hangover of that people, you know, you draw a game at a decent team like Brighton or lose in really bad circumstances at Tottenham, but put in a decent performance? Do you think that the disappointment is a bit of a hangover of knowing how much those sort of little differences can make to a season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, not too long ago, sort of picking up 85 points perhaps would have been enough to win the league. We know now that the level of perfection that Manchester City demand means that you can't really afford to drop below that 90 mark if you've got any chance. I think, you know, for Liverpool to have missed out on the title by a single point twice in the space of, you know, or 2 points, was it, the other year? But
there's one point, yeah.
You know, is galling, really, isn't it? I mean, I remember being inside Anfield for the Aston, for the, who were we playing that day when City were playing Aston Villa? We played
Wolves.
And, you know, the mood inside Anfield when Villa went 2-0 up, it was like we were on the precipice of something really, really special. And to have that taken away by a couple of late goals from City was agonising. So I think there is that element of hangover. I also think there's perhaps a bit of frustration that the last couple of seasons, it's almost felt like Liverpool have left themselves a little bit short in a couple of key positions. And, you know, if we go back to that season when Liverpool lost all of the centre-backs, it sort of felt like, you know, Dejan Lovren had left in the summer. It felt like Liverpool needed to bring in a fourth centre-back and they didn't. And ultimately that came back to bite them. And I think with holding midfielder debacle at the moment, it sort of highlights that I think if perhaps they had managed to get someone in. Admittedly, it's a tough task because I don't think there's too many players out there who can really fill that role. But I think if they'd managed to get someone in, then perhaps we might be talking a little bit differently. We might be more confident that they could go on and win the title. But I think I would really like to see McAllister play further forwards. I mean, when you go back to that season when Liverpool lost the centre-backs and they had that torrid run of form where they lost so many games, and part of that was down to sort of shoehorning Fabinho and Henderson into defence, and you know, you lost the benefit of them in midfield then. And I think it's sort of to a lesser extent the same with McAllister. I think, you know, he's not doing a particularly brilliant job. Obviously, as Doyle said, he's still learning on the job in that holding role. And I think then you lose some of his benefit going forward. So, you know, I'd be tempted to just give Enzo a run. I mean, they brought him in for a reason. They obviously saw something in him they liked. I think Jurgen Klopp was quite, you know, he always said to the Liverpool fans, didn't he, give him a chance? And now it's like, well, you know, are you going to give him a chance? Yeah. Are you going to give him a run in the team? So, yeah, but I agree. I think there's, you know, this Liverpool side have been brilliant at times over the past 8 years under Jurgen Klopp. And I think to still only have sort of one Premier League title from that time, I think that you know, rankles a little bit among some Liverpool fans. So, yeah, I think that is an element as well, that hangover from previous season.
I would like to point out Liverpool did finish fifth last season. And did you think they'd be challenging for the title this year?
Do you know what? I'll be honest, yeah.
So what did you... I thought, depending on the transfers, if they'd got like the proper holding midfielder more confident, the basic of just settled up.
That's fair, explain yourself.
Yeah, no, I didn't want to interrupt him. Yes, no. That's no. And I said definitely not. We did the predictions, didn't we? I had them finishing fifth.
I wouldn't have said definitely not. I think, you know...
But still qualify for the Champions League, because that would be enough, because I think all the teams in Europe will do well enough for them to get it. I just think the season is just get back in the Champions League. I think it reminds me a little bit of 16-17, where they started quite well. Admittedly, they were top then and everybody got a bit carried away. Of course, the difference is that Liverpool have shown in the past now with this team that they can win the league and challenge for it. But there's such large parts of the team now that are totally different to that one. It's a first step for them. And I think, while it's great for fans to get carried away, I think it has to be through that kind of, you know, realistic kind of prism of, well, hang on, they finished fifth last year. Sorry, you just dropped your stuff.
Yeah.
You finished fifth last year. They have had some very tough games. They've got a new forward line they're still trying to sort out still, as far as I'm concerned. They've had to rip up the midfield completely. And they're still trying to work out who's going to be playing centre-back, all while still trying to change the... Not changing the formation, because it's quite clearly going to be that formation, but they're having to
do
the right
that.
Back's not the right back.
Exactly. Yeah. They've had to do that while change everything else around. So I do think they're still trying to find themselves. And the reason, as I said before, that they are quite so close to the top is because the other teams are all fiddling around as well. They're having their own issues. So if Liverpool are going to challenge for the title, it'll be how quickly can they resolve their problems, because the others will sort theirs either by buying some new players in January, or just, you know, because they've got such that greater strength in depth, or the recent experience of challenging for things, that they can sort it a little bit quicker.
It's like other years, you know, when Leicester won it, you're thinking, oh, if Liverpool got their house in order, that title was there for the taking. And other years in comparison, City just walk away with it. This is one where it is there for the taking, and it's the team that is most organised and gets it all sorted quickest.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
That's my point, is that whilst I largely agree with you on all the issues going into this season and why, I never expected them to win the title, but I think they thought they could challenge, because I think anyone, if City are going to go through changes, that they're not going to... The thing about City is, I think, even if they sell a couple of players, which they've done this summer, and they bring in new players, they might have one season of transition and you expect them to get back into it. And that's where I think you would hope it's an opportunistic title challenge that Liverpool can just put a run together. And I honestly think this team, with the players, like you said, that have won titles before, other players of great quality, are capable of putting the run together. And that's the frustration for me is, again, like Beth said, is that they don't, in the summer markets, they don't always sort of take chances on players. You know, the Caicedo thing was, I don't want to go back over old ground, but perhaps if they'd been more aggressive at the start of the market, they could have put themselves in a better position. But I look at it now and think, you know, it depends on City, doesn't it? It always depends on whether they get their house back in order, but they've lost a couple of games. The last time they lost a couple of games was 5 years ago, so it doesn't happen often. So I just think Liverpool have got a chance to be a factor in this title race. Just like Arsenal, I don't really think Arsenal can win the title, but they should think they can win the title, if that makes sense. They should be looking at this now saying, this is an opportunity that we really have to go for. And I still think the same about Liverpool. And if they do that, they'll get back in the top four.
I do think Liverpool's priority, though, is getting in the Champions League, because you look at it and you go...
Your priority is to finish as high as possible.
Yeah, what I'm saying, I think the priority is to get back in the Champions League, because you also look at it and you go, well, Newcastle are going to be stronger over the next couple of years for the reasons we've done to death. Chelsea, funnily enough, what a surprise, they've suddenly started winning some games. Anybody who thought they were going to go the entire season being rubbish, silly. United have surprised me by how pathetic they are, but they still won on Saturday. And I do think they've got enough players that they could, because no matter how bad United start has been, are they only 5 points behind Liverpool? I think they are. When they play each other, say United.
Have you seen the run of games that they've played?
Yeah, I know.
Basically, it's like Liverpool through the neck. They've got the next ball. We've just discussed who they're playing.
That's been all of United's games.
And that's been United's run.
I know.
And they've won one of them. Liverpool cannot afford to do the same thing.
True. But then United, they could say, well, look, we've got a new goalkeeper here, we're trying to bed him in this, that and the other. We've got a new forward, like a new striker. I mean, that's a completely separate podcast for United. But my point being is that they are all going to get better next season. Right. And then I think...
Why is that a fact?
Because that's just what it is.
That's not a fact, is it?
Well, I think it is.
Man United can be worse this season than they were last.
They've had injuries as well.
They've had a lot of injuries.
But Chelsea,
Man United can give themselves a better chance because they've got the financial backing, which Liverpool don't have, which goes back to your point.
Which is why they need to get in the Champions League and hope that they get there at the expense of a United or a Chelsea.
There you go.
Don't think it's ever a fact that these teams get better because they're going in that direction. Teams can have a season full of injuries. They can have a season of bad luck. They can have a manager who loses his way. They can have a striker who stops scoring. And Liverpool have just got to be there.
They can do all of those things, but you have to expect that these teams, they have to anticipate that that's what's going to happen.
But they will anticipate that Liverpool are going to get better, won't they? I just went into the season thinking, I still think Liverpool are the second best team in the country to Man City. I don't look at Arsenal, who I think have improved slightly. I don't look at Arsenal and think that they're a finished package by any means.
They've got a very good 11, but they don't have the depth, do they?
No.
So they've already had a few injuries, a few more, they fall away.
I don't think they've passed mental tests yet.
Yeah, they're still a bit flat.
Last season, they failed when they still flapped a mental test. Liverpool have done that in the past. I look at Man United and think, basically everything went for them last season.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're that good. And I don't think their new goalkeeper's that good. And I don't think they've bought well this summer. I look at Newcastle and think, good spirit. But I just don't know how long they can last with the players that they've got. And Tottenham, again, they've started well. But again, I just don't expect them to continue it. So I still think Liverpool are the second best team in the country.
I actually agree with that, whether it's bias or not. I'm coming into this season, I think certainly in terms of an 11 and the calibre of players that they've got, I think Liverpool are exceptional. But I think going back to your point earlier about, you know, hangovers from previous seasons and Liverpool perhaps leaving themselves short in the opposition every now and then, it's like this season, you know, talking about an opportunistic title challenge. You know, Mo Salah was, if the media is to be believed, was close to leaving Liverpool in the summer or was tempted perhaps.
Don't believe that name. Yeah, exactly. We are the media. Don't forget.
There is a chance that he goes next summer. And, you know, I think three of us said earlier on that he was the best player yesterday. Mm. So, you know, how do you replace him? Alisson Becker, obviously the best in the world, but, you know, and still got a few years left at the top, you would imagine. But again, is getting older. Virgil van Dijk the same. So as much as obviously you do have to give new players a time to bed in, you know, Liverpool will be having to replace a lot of quality players in the next few years. So it feels like this is a season where perhaps if, you know, it is a little bit more open, if City are in transition, this will be a good time while we've still got that crop of players who won the previous title, their experience, coupled with the addition of the likes of Dominic Szoboszlai, Alexis McAllister, it will be a real chance. I think that's where the frustration lies a little bit. It's, you know, Liverpool are going to have to go through another sort of rebuild, I guess, in a couple of years. So, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, agreed. In terms of, look, I think this podcast kind of transcended just the Brighton game, which is interesting. But
that's why you should have done it fully, don't you?
Yeah. But a couple of performances. First of all, Boyle, Trent Alexander-Arnold, very, very good. Subbed off. Do you think that was pre-arranged?
It was to be, because I just couldn't quite get it, to be honest. I know he's been out injured and they're trying to manage his minutes, but I was like, hang on. Now, Matoma's not really done anything here. And Trent, while he wasn't pushing forward as much, partly because he was trying to look after Matoma, which he did successfully. It's funny, wasn't it? The one time that he didn't in the first half, but when he'd gone up and Liverpool lost the ball, so McAllister had to leg back and just foul it. Right, so I think that was kind of, you know, old school football there. Quite happy with that. Just foul the best player. There's nothing wrong with that. It's part of the rules. Especially if you can foul him in the penalty area, and you might get away with a penalty, but you're not going to get sent off.
We'll come to that after that.
Yeah. Yes, Trent, I thought Trent played really well, actually. Really well. There was no player that was outstanding for Liverpool. I had a couple of sevens when I did the player ratings, but if I could give a 7.1 or a 7.5, he would have been the one who I'd give the man of the match to. So I was surprised when he got subbed. As for the rest of them...
I'm so dismissive.
Yeah.
As for the rest of them.
I mean...
Salah was... You know,
that Salah in
yeah, Salah, Salah scored twice, so he gets a nice 7. I gave Alisson 7. I know... I'm not entirely sure what was going on with that goal.
I don't really blame him as much.
Well, okay, he was much lesser. Yeah. It just seemed a bit weird because you just thought even when he hit it, he's like, he's going to save this because it's in. How's that happened? You know,
it's because he's made so many wonderful saves.
Well, he still made a great save in the second half. Yeah. So that's why he gets a decent score. And while I only gave him 6, I thought Darwin Nunes played quite well. He didn't really have much of an attacking threat, although he did set up one of the goals and had a slight part in the penalty as well. He just kind of ran around and he did the stuff that Klopp's always wanted him to do for quite some time. And it wasn't his fault that he got not a lot of service because too many of the other players are flitting in and out and not quite reaching the levels and the formation wasn't quite right and players weren't in the right position. So having just described all that, going back to your initial question at the start of this podcast, it was a good point.
Yeah.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Beth, do you think, I see a couple of people say this, and I went along with it in the first half, I think Liverpool show Brighton a little bit too much respect. There's an element of Liverpool approaching all of these games. I think you could say the same about Wolves and going, we got beaten last season. These are a tough side, especially away from home, and just reasserting themselves as the dominant team in games.
Yeah, I absolutely think that. I think it was almost a case at times in that opening half hour of sort of playing the occasion rather than the opponent. I think, you know, Brighton have showed this season that they're far from infallible, haven't they? They've had a couple of results go against them, and in the Europa League, again, haven't always been at the best. So I think there was perhaps sort of the lingerings of those horrible defeats last season. And it sort of feels like Liverpool play Brighton about seven times a season the past few years, and very rarely seems to come out with a win, even at Anfield. So I think then perhaps is this sort of, you know, certainly among the fan base, that Brighton are a bit of a bogey side for Liverpool, and, you know, maybe that's crept into some of the players as well. But I think the one positive was that sort of opening half hour was very much felt like they'd reverted back to last season when they started so slowly and they were sloppy and seemed to sort of devoid of attacking intent. And then they managed to turn it around, which I honestly think last season Liverpool would have lost that game. I'm not sure they would have got back into it in the way that they did. So as frustrating as it was, you know, as Doyley said, after 70 minutes, you wouldn't have wanted a point, you'd have wanted all three. But I think, you know, there are positives to take. And but yeah, I agree. I think they did sort of perhaps sort of anticipate how good Brighton were going to be, and that allowed them to come into the game. And I think Matoma, actually, I think he was kept fairly quiet in the first half, in spite of Brighton being very good. I think it was only really in that last sort of half an hour that he started to run the game, and then Joe Gomez comes on. And, you know, I think that was a slightly odd decision, I've got to say. Obviously, we tore Gomez a new one, didn't he, in that FA Cup defeat?
I think for Gomez, he just doesn't seem to me... He's not a very good player coming off the bench. I think if he starts...
Takes a while to get going, doesn't
he? It does, yeah.
Last 10 minutes, he was all right. First 10 minutes, he was a bit all over the place. But so was Canality, which was another substitution, which a little bit...
Do you think that's defensive substitutions in general, though? I think it's quite difficult to change a centre-half.
Yeah, but what's interesting about that is that if you look at it, Klopp's done it quite a few times this season already. Admittedly, one time was because Van Dijk got sent up and had to change things around. But there's been a couple of games this season where he's changed things towards the end. Going back to the point about Brighton and Wolves and the way they start again, that's just part of the mental process, isn't it? Like, for example, I'm going to mention Manchester United again. No matter what's happening in the season, when they come to Anfield next, they lost the last game 7-0, so they're going to be treated with a certain sense of trepidation. So that's just natural.
You can tell. I think Tony, he's one of those people. I put myself in the same category, who just grew up with Manchester United being annoyingly...
I don't know. When I grew up, Liverpool and Everton were the two best teams.
Yeah, I'm close to that generation.
Yeah.
No. But once you get into your sort of...
30s,
No, sorry. I was paying you a compliment. Theo, I forgot what I was going to say. Which isn't very good. And I'm still buying time. Was it VAR? I see you with your pencil.
at least it was the right end. Yeah, you don't want to get me.
Yeah. We check these things in terms of you can.
Well, whether you hit me with a pencil.
But I didn't. Yeah, I didn't make contact. I don't think.
No, you definitely made contact, which linking quite well with that question.
We'll move back to that.
Can we have a look?
Can I make contact? I don't think it was a clear pencil. That analogy doesn't work.
What would Downing have done?
good process, guys. Is it all into bits? VAR, again, I mean, we can't get through a game, can we, at the moment, without talking about it. Obviously, the penalty's given. Pascal Gross drags the shirt almost off Szoboszlai's back. Doesn't even get a booking. Obviously, does give away a penalty. Liverpool didn't make too much of it, but a lot of people were asking, why did he not get sent off? We then reached out to the PGMOL, and their explanation, it wasn't a clear goal scoring opportunity. I mean, I just cannot get my head around how a guy with a goalkeeper to beat.
He's already beaten the goalkeeper. He's gone round him.
Well, whether he's gone round, but if you're standing in front of the goalkeeper, how is that not a clear goal scoring opportunity?
Yeah, I mean, it's an open goal. He's about to shoot. Granted, he hasn't pulled the lead back yet because he's already had the shirt yanked off his back. But yeah, you think that's going to be a certain goal. He's just going to roll that in. It's all there. The defender's nowhere near close enough to, if you get decent connection, that is going in. It was a strange decision, but then it's one where they complicate the rules, because I'm imagining the first thought would be, oh, double jeopardy, it's in the box. But then when you actually break down the rules, it's, hang on, this isn't a tackle to stop him scoring and he's made a play for the ball. It was a deliberate attempt to just stop him, and that carries the red card offence. But then the rules are so complex at the moment, and when you break them down, you think, oh, if you're going by letter of law, you should have gone. But then if you've done it for whatever against Spurs, it's just another officiating mess, and maybe Liverpool aren't going on about it as much as they would have done a week ago because of how badly they were wronged against Spurs. It's just happened every single week now. There is something, you go, you've just got that wrong. Like, if these are the rules that you have to stick by, and that's why you didn't stop play for Diaz's goal, and why aren't you following them for these rules? It's just a mess at the moment. It needs to go back to the very beginning for Maldon to go, this is what we need to do to improve it, this is where we're going wrong, but you can't really implement that easily mid-season. Hopefully they have a good international break.
The frustration is obviously that that situation yesterday, you can imagine that there's probably going to be a very similar situation at some point of the season that results in someone getting sent off, and it all goes back to consistency, doesn't it? And you know, yesterday I think VAR had another shocker with that. Again, not to be Blood Arsenal podcast, but you know, the Mateo Kovacic one, I mean, that was more of a red card than any of the red cards Liverpool have received this season. You know, it sounds like tribalism or, you know.
But it's mind-boggling.
That's the thing, and there's no clear justification for it. There's no clear reasoning for it. And that's why, you know, Liverpool were completely justified in making the furore that they did last week, because these decisions happen every single week, whether it's a penalty, whether it's an unprecedented goal being disallowed, whether it's a red card. You know, the referees bang on. You know, Mike Dean the other day was on Sky saying, you know, ex-pros don't fully know the rules. And it's like, so the referees actually fully know the rules, because if they did, then, you know, he'd have been sent off yesterday. So, yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it?
And I would say that Beth so far has two-footed Alison Becker by saying he's nearly finished and has just two-footed all referees. We've got Theo here. That's what he's doing. That's what he does.
To be fair, I think Liverpool players, fans and manager didn't make a big deal of this one, because perhaps it just wouldn't be the best look PR.
What I would say about the situation is that I've seen at Brighton, we only saw like one replay of it or something like that. And at no point during the entire thing did I think send him off. I just thought it's a penalty. I just thought it's a penalty. Then people were like sharing on social media the still images of like the situation. Well, hang on, it was only last week. They were saying, don't show still images of like a tackle or something like that. And I know it's a slightly different situation, but in the actual, when you were watching the game and you never really thought, because I'd have to watch it back again, I never thought, oh, he just pulled him back for a clear goal-scoring opportunity, he needs to be sent off. It just seemed to be a bit of a mess in the middle. Everybody's like reacting really quickly, and then he just went and panicked and fouled him. So I didn't think, oh, he's definitely going to score here. I just thought, well, hang on, that's a penalty. And then he played on a couple of seconds, didn't it? And then he was given. And the second thing was, I'm glad he wasn't sent off for, I actually quite enjoyed watching the game in which it was 11-11. But the weird thing is that he didn't get booked. And I think if he'd been booked for it, I don't think there'd be anywhere near the same level of debate over whether or not he should have been sent off, because I think they would have gone, well, it's a penalty, it's a yellow card. You could argue whether or not it was a goal-scoring opportunity or not, as we are now. But to not get booked for it.
How can
you... I'm saying is that at the time when the game was going on, none of us there went send him off.
But don't you think that is because I was probably the same in the first instance, because I didn't fully, you know, your mind doesn't fully appreciate in that instance that the rules, you know, you just think it's a denial of goal scoring opportunity, so therefore penalty, double jeopardy, as Theo said. But once the rules become clear, you think, well, isn't that where VAR should do their job and go, the rule is he didn't.
But then it goes down. Then it goes, I'd like to watch it again, just at full speed to see what I actually think. Rather than slowing on. I know it's not quite the same.
Watched it in full speed a few times, and I can't understand why the VAR there, when they're happy to go with the Curtis Jones tackle, go and have a look, or go into the referee. Do you not think that was a goal scoring option? Go and have a look.
They had so many things to check, though, didn't they? It's like whether Nunes was offside, who had the touch for it to go to Nunes in the first place, it's a foul, then whether it's professional foul. They clearly can't do the job. That's the main issue.
And the other thing is that that foul anywhere else on the pitch is a yellow card, because he's called him a shit and pulled it.
Yeah. I also think as well, like, the frustrating thing is, you know, perhaps in the context of a game, as Doyley said, it's quite nice to watch 11v11 and perhaps see the benefit of the doubt given in some instances, because otherwise it just completely disrupts the trajectory of the game. But it feels like Liverpool have been on the receiving end of sort of the letter of the law red cards. You know, Virgil van Dijk getting... you know, that extra ban for dissent. And then you look at, you know, Jordan Pickford absolutely slamming the lino, and then the explanation is, you know, some sort of justification for it. But
because it wasn't a decision or something like that.
Yeah, but he still abused the lino. Yeah. That's still on TV in front of people. That's still going to, you know, impact things down the grassroots, which is apparently the reason that they, you know, clamped down on it this season. So it feels like, I agree with Doyley, I don't think sort of, For the good of the game, those should perhaps be given as red cards, but to the letter of the law, it is a red card. So.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You can't have it both ways, can you? That's to me, you know, like, that thing where they even themselves out. don't necessarily think that that is true at all. And I think for Liverpool this season, that's why they're so in the lead. Because like you say, they're going against them. The Kovacic one. Again, I cannot understand how they can go with Curtis Jones. Come and have a look at this. Because that's quite a bad one. But watch Kovacic back and go, no, it's fine. You know, yeah. Move on.
No, it's one of the club's main issues against Spurs. Like, it's not just those big ones. It's the consistency and the small ones as well. The waving the imaginary yellow cards or going to celebrate with the crowd. Like Spurs, because of it, easily ended up with 9 men in that game if they were doing the same rules they'd done when booking the McAllister or Jones or Elliott in earlier games against Chelsea, Wolves. So you've got these rules. You're saying you're being really strict on them for time wasting, being really strict on them for celebrating with the crowd, for waving cards, but then you're not following them in every single game. Like there was one in, was it the Chelsea-Man City women's game yesterday where a player gets sent off for time wasting for a second booking. It's like, it's not really the worst defence there.
The fourth, the 35th minute.
Yeah, it's like, who's time wasting that?
How many time wasted that? Yeah. It's like, I've only got an hour to go, let's just play the clock down.
The totally ridiculous thing about that was Alex Greenwood, who was given the booking, hadn't even been given a warning about time wasting. You know, the referee, if she'd have gone to her earlier in the game and said, right, you're taking too long over these free kicks, and then she continued to take too long, fair enough. But to just out of nowhere, again, in the 37th minute, City were all over Chelsea at this point, they were winning 1-0. And then it just completely disrupts the trajectory of the game. And then City had a second player sent off. Mm-hmm. It for one of the yellow cards was for dissent. So it's, yeah.
Look, it was Michael Oliver, the referee. Well, I didn't see the game. I'll sit here. Yeah, so do you reckon part of that was the VAR at the Liverpool game last week went, oh, Simon Hooper's the ref, so you better come and have a look at this. Because Michael Oliver's, like, he's quite clearly the best referee, by miles the best referee. Doesn't mean he gets everything right. They just went, well, he called out, so, you know, Michael Oliver said that, so it must be right.
Yeah, but this is my thing, is like, I go back to, you can't expect these guys to get everything right. And everyone says consistency, but you can never have consistency in referee because it's so difficult.
Unless
but
every referee is just a clone of themselves.
Yeah, but, yeah exactly.
Let's just bring in robot referees.
But, which we don't want, is the one thing we don't want.
But you make that situation so much worse when you add video replays and VAR into it, because because everyone watches it and does what we've just done and goes, well, why did they make that decision? Why did the VAR get involved last week but not this week? I just can't work it out. And that's why I just think VAR is bad for football.
They've complicated it. VAR was to clear up the clear and obvious errors. But then we were like, if the technology's there, why can't it correct this? Why can't it correct this?
We all have different definitions of clear and obvious, don't we? And they clearly have.
What's worse, Joe, VAR or the league or the FA Cup?
Well, do they have...
Or international football.
They don't international football. I need the campaign to get rid of international football. I mean, who is excited, Theo? Who is excited about this international break? Who's like, oh, yes, great. You know, we can watch who England play.
I don't know. I'm going to Wales versus Gibraltar.
What? Why? Well,
is it Wrexham?
Cheap. Again, why?
Who is in there going...
It's not the Premier League.
Disrupted, but this is... Great, we get to watch a bit of top class international. No one's asked, you know. I just said it's fine, but I mean, it's just one of those things, and I can't stand international football. So international football is the worst. VAR is the
second worst, and the FA Cup is
the FA Cup. I don't dislike the FA Cup. I dislike the talk around the FA Cup, the narrative. So, but
what about the talk around VAR? Is that coming into this conversation now as well?
I suppose it is.
All right, talk about international football.
God, some of them. Right, we'll move on anyway from Brighton. Beth, it's your time to shine. Liverpool women, everything's going right for them. Two wins out of two. Looked quite solid yesterday against Aston Villa. Lots to be positive about for Liverpool women anyway so far this season.
Yeah, an awful lot to be positive about. I mean, I think they did very well in the summer, sort of quietly brought in some really shrewd signings, and I was hopeful that they would make a positive start to the season. They obviously moved into Melwood. I think that's been massive. I think in terms of just the culture shift around the place, it's been huge since they've done that. But yeah, I think any sort of, even the most optimistic Liverpool fan would have looked at their opening couple of fixtures and thought, Arsenal away at the Emirates. You know, Arsenal finished in the top three last season. They'll be challenging for the title, they hope, this season. You know, Aston Villa was sort of the best of the rest outside of the top four. So it's two really, really tough games. Liverpool have a couple of injuries. Obviously, had very, very bad luck that the club record signing that they brought in the summer, Sophie Roman-Hogg, fractured a nose and a face while away on international duty.
Rid of it.
Yeah. Although inexplicably, that international break was before the domestic season had even started, which I think is even worse. But anyway.
After the World Cup?
Yes.
So why has Scotland another break after a World Cup when that was on the eve of the season anyway?
Because international football is never satisfied with winning seasons.
So they lost her. They lost the captain, Nefi, to injury as well. So sort of felt like the stars weren't really aligning for them. But, I think I didn't actually watch, the entirety of the game last week. I was at Everton. But, from what I did see, it was a very dogged sort of battling performance. And I think last night it was a step on from that. It was one of the most complete performances I've seen from them since they came up to the WSL. Defensively, they were absolutely excellent, but also they carried a real attacking threat, and that was without a recognised striker on the pitch. And, Matt Beard said after the game last season at times, even when Liverpool were winning games, they were hanging on a little bit. They didn't have those game changers to be able to bring on. And you look at this squad now and you think you've got a club record signing who you've got yet to add to this team, a couple of other really talented attackers who you've got to add in. So really, really promising. And, I think, going into the Merseyside derby, the mood is very high in the camp. So, yeah, it's exciting.
We'll talk about the derby in just a sec. But have they changed your perception of them so far this season?
Yeah, admittedly, I'm very pleasantly surprised. I would have, they finished seventh last season, and Matt Beard has been quite open about the fact he wants to better that this season. But it almost feels like in the WSL, sort of the gap between the top four, the two Manchester clubs, Arsenal and Chelsea, is still so big that, the best the other clubs can hope for really is fifth. And I still think that is potentially where Liverpool will finish up. I think over the course of the season, the squad depth that Arsenal and Chelsea and United and City possess will ultimately trump what Liverpool have. But I think they're building something really, really special, actually. And I think, with another couple of transfer windows under the belt, I think they could really be sort of pushing to close that gap on the top four.
Cool. And the derby, obviously the men's team play the derby the week after, but big derby at Anfield, it's going to be a really good one, isn't it?
It is, and it'll be interesting because last season Liverpool, I think it was the second game of last season, Liverpool went into that off the back of a big win over Chelsea, and they got absolutely thumped by Everton, who had lost their first game of the season. This season Liverpool have won both of the two games. Everton have lost both, but I still think it will be a pretty tight game. I think Everton have been unlucky at times in their games, but
They were unlucky yesterday, weren't they?
Yeah, they
as you say, the one ruled out.
Yeah, so I think it will be another big test for Liverpool. I think one thing that will perhaps go in their favour is I think last season they were maybe a bit overawed playing at Anfield, and they felt the pressure of playing in front of the home fans at Anfield. But I think having won at the Emirates in front of a record crowd of over 50,000, I think they've got recent experience under the belt of dealing with that occasion and that pressure. So. Yeah, I'm excited for what's going to happen on Sunday.
Well, let's finish it off. I'll put you on the spot. A little score prediction for that game.
2-2.
2-2.
Yeah.
Well, you're very good.
Try not to be biased, Obviously, got Everton connections also,
Hopefully the Blues are listening and they're okay. Right, we'll be back on Friday to talk international football and a whole lot more besides. See you then.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.